She wrote, "I am told every day that I am anti-American if I am not pro-Israel. I find that to be problematic, and I am not alone. I just happen to be willing to speak up on it and open myself to attacks." And another tweet said, "My Americanness is questioned by the president and the GOP on a daily basis, yet my colleagues remain silent. I know what it means to be American, and no one will ever tell me otherwise." It's 9:29, so coming up, we're going to go to Fight the Empire with host Per Fagering, who will be joining me shortly. So stay tuned, please, to KBOO Portland, going out to you via KBOO.fm to all the ships at sea. Well, and now it's time for Fight the Empire, and Per is on the line.
Hey, good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Yeah, I kind of stuck at home. I couldn't get my car started, so.
Well, you're just going to have to feed those hamsters better.
I guess so. I think I need a new battery. But anyway, I want to talk about, you know that this is the 30th anniversary of the Caracazo, which was a big uprising in Caracas, Venezuela.
I did not know that.
And it began in February of 1989, well, at the end of February, with a protest over rising bus fares. And the government called in the police and the army, and it really turned into a massacre, which is kind of what the Caracazo means. But officially, 276 people were killed. But other sources say up to 2,000 people were killed. This went on for about 2 or 3 weeks. Apparently, on the day it started, Hugo Chavez was in charge of the Presidential Guard, but apparently he was homesick that day. And a lot of people think that this Caracazo was the beginning of the Bolivarian Revolution. A lot of army people, they really objected to being called out to fight their own people. And so later Chavez became president, and he did a lot of really great things. With the oil profits, he gave a lot of benefits to the poor people and the rural people. The only problem is that he continued Venezuela's dependency on the global market. In other words, they exported oil and they imported food. I believe even most recently, Venezuela was importing about 70% of its food. And according to Michael Hudson, the economist, he said Chavez really had no choice, which may be true. But what it meant was that when the price of oil was high, of course, Chavez could sort of spread the benefits to the poor people of Venezuela, also to other countries in the Caribbean, like Cuba and some of the other island nations. But when the price of oil fell, then all of a sudden that kind of screwed up that policy. You know, they didn't have enough money to provide all these benefits. And right away, the United States this gave the U.S. an opportunity to move in on Chavez. And it kind of, I would compare it to vulture capitalism, where companies will you know, these vulture corporations, they'll look around for some company that might be in trouble, and they'll take control of it, supposedly to reinvigorate it, to set it on its feet again. What they're really doing is selling off the pieces for profit and leaving, shambles in its wake. And you can see that the U.S. as a government, as an empire, is doing the same thing with distressed nations. And one great example would be Russia. After the Soviet Union collapsed and Yeltsin became president, the United States and these economists moved in, and they contacted the various people in the Soviet government, and they were able to buy up public assets in Russia very cheap.
Whether they were for sale or not, the Great Feast of Vultures.
That was about it, yes. And the this is where a lot of the oligarchs got their start. This is how they became oligarchs. You know, that was pretty easy oil also, but eventually they had to move to ocean, underwater drilling and going down, several miles under the ocean. And finally, what they're doing now is they are fracking. And this is not a sustainable way of getting oil. It may get the last little drops of oil in this porous rock, but it does not end well. These fracked wells, they deplete very quickly, and they have to be constantly drilling new wells, and of course they get further and further away from the what they call the sweet spots. And actually, what a lot of people don't know is that none of these fracking oil companies have made any profit in all the time that they've been operating. They've been sort of living on investors. It's a real Ponzi scheme. People keep investing in oil fracking companies because they think it's the way to go. They've been bamboozled. Well, even now, Wall Street apparently is having second thoughts about this.
I guess if you can't extract enough oil, you can always extract some suckers.
Extract a little more money, yeah. But that's the oil that we are using, and it's getting near the end of its usability. And also, the oil that's still in the ground cannot be used because of the its effects on the climate. So basically, it's like this oil run, this 200-year oil run, is coming to an end, but we need it or else the economy will collapse. You think of all the things that oil does. Without oil, what do you have? The very first thing to go might be aviation.
Go ahead.
You can have electric cars and you can have electric trains, that run on renewable energy, but I have yet to see an electric airplane. So that would be one of the things to go. And you think of all the consumer products that use oil in them, a lot of those would go. The economy would really collapse, but we're stuck. We are still hooked on oil. This transition away from oil should have started 20 or 30 years ago, but it hasn't. We're just beginning to do it now. And so here we are in this position where we need the oil, even though it's not there. And I think that's sort of behind what's going on in Venezuela, beside the fact that Hugo Chavez is setting, as far as the U.S. empire is concerned, he's setting a horrible example. You know, he's not cutting in the wealthy on the oil profits. He's giving a lot of that money to the poor. So anyway, there we go. That is one of the things with the coming war on Venezuela.
Yeah, I noticed that Greg Palast was writing about that too, pointing out that the Koch brothers have giant refineries which are keyed up to produce Venezuelan oil, the thicker stuff. And I was also thinking that Venezuelan oil, you know, it's the value of it dropped doubly, not just because of the fracking phenomenon flooding the market, but because also it's just thicker stuff. So now it has value in the Koch brothers' minds as reserves, I'm sure, because they are able to refine all that, and it's such a massive amount. It's one of the world's largest reserves of oil, so they want that. And of course, there's gold in the highlands as well, and it's just tasty, tasty, tasty. And as you say, it seems that Trump's not even bothering to disguise it. It's just straight up piracy is apparently okay with him.
Well, it's very interesting. You know, when the oil companies first moved into Venezuela, they purposely kept the refineries out of Venezuela because they knew that if Venezuela had refineries, it could market its oil itself. And so they kept the refineries on the Gulf Coast and I think in Trinidad. And this keeps Venezuela dependent on the U.S. for refining, taking its oil to market.
Classic imperial move. You keep the refineries out of Chile and copper. Everyone is not able to add the value to their own product. That's done, you know, overseas. It's done by the U.S. so that they can rake up those profits.
That's right. That's right. We just want the raw materials, and we'll take it from there, including the profits. But now this, you know, I think there's a real possibility that the U.S. may try to invade. Trump certainly talks like he's about to, although I understand that Brazil has said that it will not invade. And so it looks to me like Trump is in a sort of a dead end here.
I'm thinking contra war, because I'm looking at Elliot Abrams.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at this guy Corrales, who put this article in the New York Times, very broadly implying that contra war was the way to go. And I'm looking at U.S. history. When they're frustrated in these ways, they just find a group of people. You can always find and pay a group of people who can hold up in the hinterlands, take that cash money payout, get the military training, and go kill people for the glorious whatever.
I think what this would lead to would be it'd certainly be a civil war in Venezuela. You know, there are militias of Chavez and Maduro supporters, and they are armed, and they've actually apparently been trained by the Cuban military. But there's between a million or a million and a half militia people, and they're not going to have their gains on the revolution taken away from them. And any kind of a civil war in Venezuela, I think, could very easily spread to Brazil and Colombia. You know, Colombia, the government there, has sort of reached an agreement with the FARC guerrillas, but not with the other force, the ELF, I think the ELF. And the agreement with FARC is sort of it's kind of very iffy right now. Plus the fact that Colombia has well armed right wing death squads. They've been there all this time. They haven't been really talked about in the news that we hear. So it's like civil war in Venezuela could easily spread to Colombia, also could spread to Brazil. This new kind of fascist-minded president, Bolsonaro, he has indicated that he's going to move in on Indian lands, turn the Amazon rainforest into plantations for soybeans and cattle ranches, which would actually destroy the Amazon, and the Indians have been resisting, and I would assume that when it gets to this point, they will resist even more, and they will be better armed, and so this could be a kind of continental civil war.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that as you were saying that. That's to be avoided, if possible, from even starting. Although, you know, these things are done sort of, I want to say, under our noses. Like, you and I know about it. It's possible to find out about it, but it's almost impossible to get enough public attention to actually stop it before it really gets underway. And so I kind of fear that Elliot Abrams is just up to his usual tricks. The Venezuelan military, I've noticed, has they've bought some really expensive and useless stuff, but they've also bought some very smart stuff for defending themselves. For example, the one of their most common rifles is—it's not some rusty AK. It's capable of full automatic or semi-auto or triple fire. It's accurate at long range, and it has a night scope. So this is not—you know—that's not going to be an easy win for those Contras or for anyone else who wants to invade and cause trouble there. And it's just—it looks horrible and bloody already.
Well, you know, I think the news that we are getting has been really, really terrible. I don't have a TV, so I don't get to watch Fox and CNN. I can imagine what they're saying. I get my news from KBOO and also from NPR. And I have to say, NPR's coverage has been really, really bad. And along with BBC, which I kind of listen to at night when I'm up, it's, they sort of outright lie, but they also ignore, they get their false message over by ignoring what's the truth of what's going on. And one thing is this whole idea of starvation. You know, they keep getting these stories of people feeding themselves out of the garbage cans. And but there have been reports, like Max Blumenthal was actually there in Venezuela, and he filmed some of the supermarkets, and they're better to do neighborhoods, also some of the markets that the government has set up for ordinary people. And there is food, and people are not starving in Venezuela. Also, Ken Silverstein has said the same thing, and Silverstein personally really dislikes Maduro, thinks he's repressive, but he's not a dictator, and he reports that there's a lot of food there too. But you keep getting these reports on NPR and BBC that the Venezuelans are starving, and it's I'm not sure how they do it. They're very selective about who they interview and what they report on. It's it gives really a false picture. So even educated people in this country, the NPR listeners, they're getting a really skewed picture of what's going on in Venezuela.
And Fox News will just straight up lie where it serves their purposes. And I noticed that just early this morning when I was getting ready for my show and looking over the Fox News articles. And in their argument against California, for example, against California for being flooded, they were saying that they weren't raising the dams. And I looked it up, and it turns out that Californians have been quite busy and going to great expenses to raise their dams. So it's just made up out of whole cloth, and it's the same for what Fox News says about Venezuela. They threw in some good information as well. Inflammation, I said accidentally. like they talk about the hyperinflation, but they never talk about what caused the hyperinflation. And it reminds me of those memes that I've seen on Twitter in which an actor walks into a studio and pulls out a pistol and blasts away at another actor sitting in a chair. And the titles for such demonstrations are, you know, and then the text is the shooter blaming the person in the chair for not getting up, of course. So that's the U.S. and Venezuela.
Well, this whole thing about so-called humanitarian aid, which everybody's repeating, you know, that phrase. And when you think about it, what's happening is that the sanctions are like a they're like a military siege. They are stopping aid getting through to Venezuela, you know, like billions of dollars in aid, and then they are sort of handing out a few million in food, but you have to come through us to get your food. This is really kind of a despicable way of doing it. But apparently aid is getting through. The UN and the Red Cross refused to go along with this game, and apparently now aid is coming through to Venezuela from Russia and other countries, I think China, and going through the normal channels. So it's possible that the blockade is sanctions is not working the way the empire intends it to. But it's really you don't get that from listening to NPR. You just get this picture of yes, magnanimous U.S. is sending aid to Venezuela, but their cruel army is blocking it, you know, so the people will continue to starve. And this is just a totally false picture.
Well, you can probably guess what I'm going to say. In my years of watching the press, I've seen that that's automatic slide to imperialism from NPR. And it's disgusting. I see the same thing in the former great empire of Britain. I look at The Guardian and get so many great stories from The Guardian, so much good reporting about what's going on in the U.S. Had one of their reporters in this studio a couple of years ago, keeping track of police killings when no one else would at that point. Just terrific coverage. And then when it comes to this crisis, they simply, it's the same line. You know, the failure of socialism has led to the starvation, blah, blah, blah. And so let's invade.
Well, I think The Guardian used to be better than it is now. It seems to be slipping.
Yeah, well, they still got some good stuff and still totally knee-jerk imperialists.
They're really going after Corbyn, you know, along with the, it's...
Oh, yeah, they hate him.
And they're going after, there's a guy used to write for The Guardian, Seamus Milne, and he was one of their better writers, and he is now, I think he's an aide to Jeremy Corbyn. But he's been sort of blocked out of the news. He's been really smeared. And so there's this whole anti-Semitism campaign going on in England. It's but I wanted to ask you, why do you think NPR... I have my theories why NPR is going along with the empire. It's like they're
Well, let's just follow the money. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
Who buys those big ads?
They're in the belly of the beast. They it's like a company town, and they every time I hear some new person interview, and they sort of repeat the same message, but you keep these new think tanks that I never heard of before keep popping up like mushrooms.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine KBOO running an ad for the Koch brothers?
No.
but U.S. public media will, and. I mean, or running an ad for a car and including the words from the jingle with it.
I mean, well, we could have run an anti-ad for the Koch brothers.
Yeah. Hey, you're giving me ideas.
Well, anyway, I just thought, I'm very disappointed in the NPR and the BBC. And also, I'm kind of getting disappointed in The Guardian. It's I kind of give it the once over every day to see what's going on with them. but I think it has slipped.
I think education features into it as well, plays into it, because there are people who have all their lives out of their textbooks read that, for example, Ronald Reagan was a great president. What a great president he was, and, you know, just one of the titans, and don't know who Elliot Abrams is, and don't know about, you know, the rivers of blood and the horror that was caused by that foul Contra war against Nicaragua, against Guatemala and Honduras, El Salvador, and don't realize that it's the same actors and it's the same reasons. It's you know, support is the desire to extract profits from populations that are completely marginalized by militarized governments.
Well, that's sort of I don't know where do you think Venezuela will go? Do you think there will be a civil war? I mean, it looks to me, as far as I can tell, that this Guaido and this rebellion is really petering out. You know, the Maduro government is staying in power, is holding on, and it does have a lot of support. You know, you keep hearing that, well, the military is standing firm, but the people are switching sides. Well, every now and then you see a picture of some pro-government demonstration in the streets. The streets are totally filled. Hundreds of thousands of people are out there supporting their government. Maybe they think their government hasn't gone far enough as far as defending workers, but you know, it's better than the opposition. And so it looks to me like this opposition is not succeeding. And what they'll do is, I guess they either up the ante or else they kind of fade away.
Honestly, I think, I mean, with these actors in place, they're just going to do what they always do. I mean, if I look at the map of Venezuela, I would assume that they'll take their Contras into probably Amazonas province, or they'll run them up the Orinoco River or the Paraguay or the Caroni, and they'll establish little camps there, and the, you know, 18 or 20% of the Venezuelan people who, you know, can get money from the oil industry and historically have, and who are, you know, that right wing and that anti-Venezuelan pro-U.S. are going to be supplying them with their kids and their aid, and they will manage to create some level of civil war.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's also a disputed region called Essequibo, which I believe now is part of Guyana, but Venezuela kind of has claims on it, and it's an oil-rich region. And nothing's going on there right now, but you can see that area heating up possibly. But anyway, I thought I'd leave you on a lighter note. You know, the debate that's going on in England
about Brexit.
Yes, well, it's sort of reached a new level. There's a British economics professor. Her name is Victoria Bateman. And she gave an anti-Brexit lecture. She's for remaining in the EU.
Uh-huh.
And she gave this lecture at Cambridge in the nude. And she had written across her torso with something like, Brexit would leave us naked or something like that. But anyway, so the debate goes on at this sort of higher level.
Well, good for her. I see the headlines. May's Brexit vote is on a knife edge, and it's coming up, I guess. Brexit clock is ticking.
That's right. The end of this month, and what happens after that, I have no idea. I'm still trying to figure out what the EU is doing, what its purpose is, but it gets very complicated.
Well, I guess it's time to look at the engineer and see if we've got outro music.
I think so. Well, it's been good talking to you. I got to have to think I will call AAA and get my car going now, but it's really nice that we have this technology at our disposal.
Hooray for wires.
Yeah.
Ah, there it is.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and we'll be seeing you next time.
All right, goodbye, Pear.
Bye.
And to fight the Empire.
holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a live performance by Antonio Rey on Thursday, March 7th from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall in Portland. Antonio Rey is one of the leading flamenco guitarists of Spain today. Rey will be with flamenco dancer and singer Mara Rey. Again, that's Antonio Rey on Thursday, March 7th from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall, 1422 Southwest 11th in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.